Good morning again. This presentation, it's certainly not TDD. Might be a little bit, it's only SIP, so you know, it's easy. Let's see, get a little bit bigger. What is this about? I just thought that Camelia is something that I've been using for years, and it's come up in a few places. We've seen it at Congress events. I know other people are using it for simple things in Osmocom testing. Not really an Osmocom component, but it's around, and we're using it. What am I going to talk about here? I'm going to talk about using it, which is what I originally did, as a kind of a multi-homed public internet to VPN back-to-back user agent with a proxy, and just simple like call routing and PSTN gateway, certain modules that I've used in it, and a few other things that we did with Camelia and certain friends and family in the same type of software. I want to talk about, importantly, transcoding using the RTP engine. What this presentation is not about is what maybe some of you might associate Camelia with, which is all the IMS use case. You know, originally in Rizomatica 10 years ago, when we started doing this, we just had free switch in the communities, and we were buying PSTN gateway services from resellers, and you know, we weren't handling any money at that point. Rizomatica didn't even exist as an entity. When I figured out that it might be a good idea to centralize all that and do our own PSTN gateway, I wanted something centralized. Originally, I thought, well, I'd probably just use free switch for that because I didn't really know an awful lot about SIP software or routers or the things. I was looking for I was actually investigating using free switch for it, and I came across this Camelia thing, which is, what is that? That's a weird name. But it appeared to be the tool. I bumped into a fella called Stefan Sayer, who I would, big shout out to Stefan for all the help, because he first of all said to me, yeah, absolutely, Camelia is the thing for that. Then he helped, gave me some pointers. You know, it's like not the most steep learning curve I've ever encountered, but sometimes it's just, you know, it's just really nice when somebody points out the simple things. You know, the things that after you've been using something for 5 years are totally simple, but when you're looking at it for first, you're like, what is this? When I first did that, what I was doing was I just put it as kind of a bridge between the public internet and the VPN, and I was running RTP over the VPN. Why was I doing that? Because some of the communities were behind various levels of NAT routers, from the WISP to another WISP and then wherever, and sometimes, you know, the RTP wouldn't make it through that. I was using RTP proxy as the RTP proxy. RTP proxy was pretty much what it says on the tin. It just take RTP in one side and out the other side of a multi-homed machine. I also wanted to, you know, and I think in the schedule, what I wrote there was just like, this should be taught, should be maybe titled How Not to Write a Camelia Config, because I think I did pretty much everything wrong in the beginning, and my config is now like a mess of all kinds of different options of ways of doing things. One of the things that I did was I seriously overused this NAT management section in the configuration, because it seemed to be where like everything to do with transcoding and the RTP management was actually going on. But it doesn't really matter. Let me try some espresso. Coffee. Twin Peaks should really be like the motto of us techies rather than Star Trek. You know, Star Trek, they don't drink enough espresso.
Okay.
Earl Grey espresso. Okay, so I don't know if I don't really know who I'm talking to here. So I'm sorry if this is a little bit basic for some of you, but let's just have a quick look at what does a Camellio config file look like? Because when you first look at it, it looks a little bit like code. You can see you've got, you know, an import file and you can set values, parameters. M-home there, for example, like sets it up as a multi-home system, so it's going to listen on various interfaces. If you don't have that, it won't listen on various interfaces. You've also got a kind of a define where my domain will be interpreted, in this case, as sip.rizomatica.org, wherever it's encountered in the file. You can see other ones below there, which would be VPN, IP, and that, which would be defined somewhere. And then you have ifdefs, where you can have blocks dependent on defines. That little line there with the advertise, where we have a listen, but it says advertise, that's highly useful, which just because if you have your Camellio running behind that, where you don't have a public IP address directly on the machine, you can then tell Camellio what its public IP is so that it can use that where relevant. And then we have, you know, this really sort of a flow structure, which everything begins in this request root. I say root because I'm Irish. Americans would say route. I don't know, but I'm going to say root. People get confused sometimes because I say root, and they, what do you mean root? Yeah. So you know, the request root, every thing that comes in, every SIP message that comes in is a request, really, except for the ones that aren't, but they're still requests. So everything goes through this. And then we just basically send them to other routes. So you can see in this case, you know, I'm going to go some route, and then some route would do stuff and maybe exit or maybe return or whatever. But it's a flow like that, you know, it's just functions, if you like, with the usual kind of stuff. You know, if in that case, you know, we could check if it's a message or not in request route, or we could just go to the root message and then say, if it's not a message, then just get out of here and go do the next thing. I mean, simple flow control, but it's not really just a config file. You know, you're actually programming it. I think the reason for all of this is because Camellio is super highly optimized to be able to get maximum amount of messages through with minimal resource usage. Right. So one of the things then that I ended up also doing with it was to have VSAT and terrestrial routing to communities. So you know, you want to decide what to do there. So I then came across introducing the first module that I was using, which is a Camellio routing module, which then requires that you attach a database to Camellio. In this case, I was using MySQL. And then you have these tables in MySQL where you put in your gateways and then you put in your routing rules, which is the part at the bottom. It's a bit wrapped, but you can see where it says 8,6 over there. That is the gateway list. So if the call number would match the prefix, then we're going to go to gateway number 8 first. And if that doesn't work, then it will fall back and use gateway number 6. So, you know, gateway number 8 there being an IP port. And then, well, so is the satellite gateway. But the satellite gateway is another program called SEMS, which was the SIP Express Media Server or something like that, which I will talk about in a moment. You know, then you do, you know, somewhere in your Camellio config, you call do routing, and, you know, based on whatever the URI, the number being called, It will look up the table and figure out where to go. You can also put in time specifications so that you can route if it's a certain time of the day or a certain month or whatever. You could do all that kind of routing in this module. I wanted to mention here that also we had developed for Rizomatica using as the SEMS server that we were using as our satellite gateway. We wrote this thing called RTP MUX, which is not an awful lot different to OSMUX, except for it also compresses the RTP header itself, and it has the same kind of stuff. I mean, you can specify how many RTP packets you're going to put into one UDP packet. So you know how many milliseconds, how often to actually transmit. But then it does this funky thing where you actually take out some of the redundant information in the RTP header, like the sequence and timestamp and that, and then recreate that on the other side, so saving a few bytes there on the RTP. I don't think OSMUX does that, but I'm not sure. Anyway, it's not really. I don't think OSMUX really operates outside of the OSMOCOM. Anyways, you can't just use it as a standalone RTP muxing solution. So that exists. If anybody ever wanted to do just plain old RTP MUX. One of the things I discovered as well when you bring up any SIP user agent on the internet is you're going to get hit by everybody and their brother a lot. And most of those things will, some of them are just scanners that are trying to find out like how many, you know, get information on user agents that are out there, but one time we did get, I made a config error and somebody managed to make calls, to get calls through to our PSTN gateway. Apparently the main reason why I do that is because you call numbers that that charge back. So it's a way of kind of laundering, money laundering. There's things like this you could do in Camelio. There's all kinds of these pseudo variables that relate to parts of the SIP message, and you can just check them with the regular expressions or whatever. And in this case, you know, if your user agent is SIP CLI or friendly scanner or whatever, we'll then just exit because we don't really want to waste resources responding to those people. This I did was just really simple blocks there of testing against what number is being accessed. If it's an invite, then it's the URI, and if it's a register, well, then it's the number part of the two field, right? I don't remember, but so that just maps to IPs, and this allowed me to. It was part of the idea that saying, well, people who use the GSM network in the communities, if they're outside of the GSM network, they could connect a SIP client via Camelio and actually register to the free switch in the community so that they could receive calls and make calls as if they were in the community when they're not, as long as they have an internet connection. But it works. It was never really implemented. I mean, I'm talking with... we were talking yesterday about things that you do that nobody ever uses, you know, maybe having ideas and implementing things and all the things you can implement. This is one of the things I implemented. I don't think anybody ever used it except for me. It was a little bit because you do have to then go a little bit further and get somebody to show them how to set up a SIP client on their device and issue them with a password and all that kind of stuff. Just as like simple examples is what you do. One way of doing something like that, Camelio, is just if blocks. And this one, so this was routing with the Osmo MS lookup client for the distributed GSM stuff. So we also have Camelio attached to our VPN, so when you get a call coming in for an extension, we can ask the DGSM system, where is this extension right now? With the Osmo MS lookup client, which returns us some JSON, and then we have this Jansen module in Camelio that allows me to parse the JSON and get out the IPs and set up the bottom line there where I set my SIP URI for where I want the call to go, which also works for SIP message. I also implemented SIP message to SMS. So a SIP client anywhere can send a SIP message to extension at sip.rhizomatica.org, and it turns up as an SMS on the user's phone in the community. Vice versa, they can also reply, and that goes back out as a SIP message to the other side if it's valid. Again, something I don't think anybody ever used except me. So yeah, I mean, other things that I did. There's at one point I had a lot of we had a lot of DIDs, and then we changed the provider, but it actually turned out the new provider was the one that had resold the other DIDs to the other people. So it was the same numbers. It's just that we got this new block of numbers, and they were all just like the same number, but plus 150. So at one point, rather than go through and change everything, I just wanted to do something really quickly. So I just did this. I mean, I'm just putting this here because I'm just saying this is the kind of stuff you can actually do in the Camellio config file. You know, it's kind of crazy, but yeah, you can cast it to an integer and add 150 and cast it back to a string and put it back in the SIP header. Okay, I mean, I didn't find anything you can't do in Camellio yet. Although that one kind of there was this gotcha there because with these variables, you have to set the fu is the from user, and you have to set that after you've already then proceeded to branch. If you do it before you've branched, it doesn't work. But you know. So this was another thing, you know, for a long time we just had, you know, people would call the DID numbers in the communities, and if something was wrong, like there wasn't any connection because the WISP was down or whatever, it would just time out, and then, you know, the PSTN network would just go beep, 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 or, you know, just hang up or whatever. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be nice to put a message that says, hey, sorry, the community's not available right now. Let's try later. So once again, I used SEMS. So SEMS has a module which is called Early Announce, which just you just send a call there, plays back the audio with a when it sends a 183. So we don't actually answer the call. It's early media, and plays back some audio file you've pre-prepared, and then hangs up. So you know that's. There's within Camellio, you can do things like, I have this, this is where I'm going to route it. And you say, well, if this branch fails, we'll then go here. And so there you have, you know, you're on failure. We go to this manage failure being a failure route. And then, you know, delete the existing RTP engine setup that we have and just check that the call isn't already canceled. Not that really matters, but, you know, just saving, sending, erroneous SIP messages to the other side, and then we add headers to the SIP message. In this case, the early announce being the name of the application. I mean, when you send this header to SEMS, it says, okay, well, if I have this app name header, then I know I need to activate the early announce module, and then I can also send it, say, what final reply code do I want it to send, in this case being 502. Okay, so after a little while with the RTP proxy, then I decided it's time to move to RTP engine and start doing more transcoding. We were always doing all the transcoding in FreeSwitch. And then, you know, because originally we didn't have AMR support, it was all GSM and upstream providers. It was like G729 to GSM, not great, but it was what we were doing at the time because we didn't have much bandwidth to the communities. But really, I think with AMR, there's not a lot of point in like using G729 AMR. Pretty much, probably AMR is more less bandwidth hungry even. So we started doing a lot of transcoding, and I think this might be interesting for the Osmocom, especially people looking at codecs with the. RTP engine, you can control quite a lot of parameters when you send it this control message to say what do I want to do. So you can tell it if you got an offer message with this list of codecs, I want you to strip out this one. I want you to not strip out this one from the A leg, but don't offer it to the B leg, or do offer this one to the B leg, even if it's in the A leg or not, and then activate transcoding or not based on what things. You can reorder the codecs. You can say, if I want to prioritize this one. But also in the case of the AMR codec, you can also set your mode set that you want the codec to use, which will RTP engine will then inform the codec engine that those are the modes it's allowed use. And you also have this codec mode request interval parameter, which you can say to RTP engine, tell the other side that I want, you know, send a codec mode request to the other side every 1.5 seconds in this case. And you have this mode change interval, which is also interesting, which says that if RTP engine is getting a lower codec rate, lower bandwidth codec rate than the maximum that you've specified for, I think it's a five consecutive intervals, will then send a codec mode request to the other side to say up the codec mode to the next highest one. So you know that. So with that, actually, so in FreeSwitch, the AMR module that I was using is the AMR code that's in the FreeSwitch repository. But you have to, I don't know if you still have to do that, but there was something you had to do to get it to compile because it wasn't the AMR patents or whatever. But it's still open core AMR, right? I think it's open core AMR is the only thing we have in free software in terms of AMR. Now, RTP Engine is using FFmpeg, which is in just later, of course, using open core AMR. But for some reason, when I transcode with RTP Engine from PCM A or U to AMR and then send that to FreeSwitch, which just passes it through and we end up on Osmo BTS, I get much better quality than transcoding even PCMA U to AMR in the FreeSwitch. Of course, yeah, but it could be a whole bunch of reasons for that. But I was noticing a lot that we get this really bad downlink quality on the measurement reports with the AMR that FreeSwitch was producing. And so decided to centralize all the transcoding and get that load off of the... I mean, we were using reasonably powerful computers and, you know, looking at CPU usage and everything, it wasn't about that. How?
Do you know what FreeSwitch is using to transcode?
So, yeah, question is, do I know what FreeSwitch is using to transcode? Well, it's using the AMR.c in the FreeSwitch source modules directory is just really simple. It's just calling... It's calling the AMR, the OpenCore AMR encode function. I mean, it's not doing an awful lot of other processing as far as I can make out. I don't know like what else FreeSwitch is doing with RTP before. Maybe it's doing something inefficient or something bad or not optimal. But anyway, this was better. RTP engine, by the way, also has this mechanism to kick in kernel proxying. So basically, just does something with loads a module into NetFilter, and then so if you're not transcoding, it can shift that into the kernel, so it's not sending RTP packets into user space. Okay. So also, when I started moving the RTP proxies around the place, I had one always running on the same machine that was running the Camellio, and then I got this other machine in the data center of the satellite provider. So I had two, or three in this case, RTP engines running. And so you have this parameter for the module, which is the set ID, which of the set being the set of RTP engines and having an ID. And so you need to decide which RTP engine you're going to configure when you're going as you're processing the SIP transaction. And, you know, this is the kind of things that get me a little bit. I'm thinking, how are you supposed to do this? Because, you know, I think it took me a while to kind of understand that SIP's not really stateful. I mean, it is, but you can restart Camellio and nothing really bad happens because there's messages are just flowing. I think that's why the amount of headers is so complicated, because all the information is in there. So if you want to add something, it's a bit, I suppose, like adding a cookie or something, you can add it into the header. So in this case, what I did was, you know, just add this RTPM, I don't know why RTPM, but I, you know, made that up and add that into the record root header, so that I can, so when I get the responses back from the other side, I know which RTP engine instance is associated with this SIP transaction. And so then I can set the ID again before I call the RTP engine manage. You know, I don't know, it looks simple, but it took a while to figure some of this stuff out. Oh yeah, okay, that was, yeah, when we were using the other PSTN providers, originally resellers and that, most of it was password-based stuff, but then when we figured out, or discovered that upstream, more professional upstream providers usually just base everything off IP address as a whitelisted IP address, so that was another reason for actually for implementing Camellio in the first place, so that everything goes through one proxy, which is authorized. And again, I was just using the routing module there to do, I think, a couple of things to do with like prefix adding and modifications. Okay, yeah, that was an interesting comment, I think, that I thought was something to put out there, that with one of our upstream PSTN providers, if I send them PCMU, it would work for mobile calls, but not when I was calling a landline. It had to be PCMA, or it was the other way around. I don't remember, but there was one weird thing like that took a really long time to figure out. So, you know, again, using Camellio and depending on, with using if statements, depending on which provider it was, whatever, to be able to change whichever codecs we're using, depending on where the call is coming from or going to. Re-invites are a thing that I neglected for a long time until I realized it's really important, because a lot of the time provider will send a re-invite after 15 minutes or 30 minutes or so, and if you're not handling it right, you might lose audio. And it does actually, you do need to take a lot of care with that in the Camellio config, because if you've done stuff with RTP engine, you need to do it again when the re-invite comes in, otherwise you end up sending the wrong STB to the other side and you'll lose your session. Okay, this is not very, yeah, just, I mean, there's, I did this with lots of if statements on the DID numbers being called to set the URI. I could have done it with the routing module. I did it this way. You know, I think it's, if it's with a routing module, you can reload this kind of stuff without having to restart Camellio. There's external commands you can use to control that. Yeah, again, that was just like, depending on which provider it was, we can do stuff with which codecs we're going to use, because we had upstream providers that were supporting GSM codec, for example, so we could do, if it was using GSM full rate in the community, we could route that call without having to do any transcoding. And then another thing we did with Camellio was through this web phone, which was a phone web app thing that's written in AngularJS, that the idea with doing that was for to have some way for people to be able to do the SIP calling that I mentioned earlier on without having to install a SIP client. Eventually that kind of got got blocked by the fact that when you're using web apps on Android, you can't actually get access to the internal speaker. You can only use the external speaker. So you could make a phone call, but you can't make a phone call. You have to listen to it. So there's that guy again. And what we did do with was interesting with that was use Camellio to, with this T-Silo module, which is a transaction silo module. So when you get an invite coming in for a phone, that phone may have gone to sleep at that point. So what we maintained is a push notification database for every SIP client that has registered. And then when the invite comes in, Camellio stashes that, sends a push notification to the phone, which wakes up, which then re-registers to Camellio. And when Camellio sees the register, it goes back to the T-Silo module and says, do I have any messages for this? And it says, yes, you have an invite for this phone. So then it sends the invite, and then the other side responds. And there you go. That's how that works. The same works for M-Silo, which is the same thing, but for SIP messages. So when you send an SMS to a phone, again, push notification wakes it up and registers, send a message. Just a Jitsi, the Jigasi Gypsy to SIP thingy turned out doesn't accept any invites from any IP that isn't the IP that you configured in the Jigasi to where Jigasi should register. So that was kind of a pain. So the easy way to get around to that was just to put a Camellio in the middle, because the Camellio was just forward everything to the Jitsi. And then, you know, again with Camellio for this, in this case, you can call, if you're in the community, if you're in a Rizomatica community, you can call 150001 and it will connect you to the Jitsi in Sala 1. And then again, you know, just adding headers, stuff you can do in Camellio. So that's just about it for my pretty simple Camellio introduction. Does that is that all way under everybody's head, or is there anything there of interest? Questions?
Is the touring complete?
So I usually face a this scenario where I want to test something, which I would like to have some sort of like echo back service, like when I do a phone call, so I don't need two phones. And that also means like double signaling on the BICA file or whatever. So is that easy to set up with Camellio, this kind of service, just like to get some sort of just speaking machine talking to me?
An echo back?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, SEMS actually is a piece of software that I think has gone a little bit out of fashion, maybe. I would say it's end of life or unmaintained. But it's hugely capable and versatile, and it's got all these modules that I'm pretty sure there's an echo module in SEMS. It's got the conference, it's got this early announce thing.
But that's not part of Camellio, right?
It's not part of Camellio, no, but you... I mean, it's just it's a SIP user agent. You listens on a port and does things.
So, but then yeah. I would need to set up like Camellio and then set up SEMS.
You wouldn't necessarily need to set up Camellio. I mean, if you were connecting Osmo SIP connector to something, then maybe an easy way to do some simple routing would be to put a Camellio there, because then you can say, well, if it's this number, you know, if RU equals nah, whatever, then do this, otherwise, you know, go here. And that might be a little bit easier than messing around with something like FreeSwitch and its full-blown PBX and all of its configuration files and profiles, which can be maybe...
Yeah, I mean, because
I think Camellio is probably the easiest way to do some really simple.
The point would be to have like the minimal set of stuff that you need, so you can easily just run that. Because usually, I mean, just to test phone calls on the GSM side. So yeah, maybe it could be nice also to have that kind of setup somewhere like configured, so we can just reuse that somehow.
Sure.
Like copy on my laptop and just run it or whatever on.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably be done with also some Docker or something. I'm not really a big Docker person, but or whatever, these Ansible or Vagrant or
One short answer also for Power. Camellia explicitly said we are not a PBX, so this is an anti-feature of our stuff to have like conferences, Echo, and all the things. My question for you, do you have any stability issues or anything that you have to restart Camellia every X or anything about it?
No, never. I mean, I think it's really, really well written. I'm actually still running Camellia 4.4 on the main server, which is pretty old at this point. But again, I'm not an update guy, you know, which is why I don't get hit by a lot of bugs like those ones that have come out in the last few years. It's like, hey, security alert, that's cool, I did an update.
One question I had was, why do the operators send re-invite like, you know, after the call?
Why do the operators, sorry?
Send re-invites after the like the call, 30 seconds into the call. You mentioned
a re-invite.
Yeah.
Oh, not 30 seconds. Maybe for like 15 minutes or something like that. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a keep alive, maybe. I don't know why they do, but they do.
Any more questions?
I think we need to wrap it up. You already. Thanks again.
Thank you.